Hi, welcome to Measure the Metric, a podcast about engineering monuments, the people who built them, and the people who use them. My name is Vivian Yu.
And my name is John Julius.
I'm a civil engineer.
I'm married to a civil engineer.
And we're back to this real actual opening, hey?
Yeah, we're back. It's the old format. It's comfortable. I like it. We've been doing it a long time.
No funny accents.
No.
Trying to be too clever.
I wonder how many listeners we lost as a result of the funny accents.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah.
Every episode, we're going to pick one engineering monument. Maybe it's ancient or maybe it's brand new from somewhere in the world.
We're going to tell you about what it is, why it was built, when it was built, how it was built, what it was used for. We're going to talk about all sorts of the who, what, when, where, why, how, all of those verbs.
Yeah, you still got it.
Yes, those are not verbs. I don't know anymore.
I'm sure most of our listeners are in the same situation that we are, kind of in this self-isolation, quarantine, lockdown period as we're all riding through the COVID wave of 2020. So I thought this wasn't actually in our original programming, but in honor of us being in lockdown, we thought we'd do an episode on Alcatraz.
Alcatraz. So it's great. As your apartment is starting to feel like a prison, or your home, I don't know where you live, as your domicile is starting to feel like a prison, we just want to remind you that a real prison is a lot more clever and a lot worse.
That's right. So, things could always be worse.
Things could always be worse.
And so, you know, maybe in the next hour as you listen to this, you can imagine and somehow romanticize Alcatraz and being in Alcatraz. I mean, that's a thing. There's a lot of movies made of it, and it's been romanticized a lot. So
yeah, I think the idea of getting out of Alcatraz has probably been romanticized.
Well, I mean, I'm sure we're also romanticizing about getting out of our apartments. So
yes,
I can sympathize.
Yes. All right, before we kick things off, so Alcatraz is in San Francisco?
That's right. It's 2 kilometers off of the coast of San Francisco.
Okay.
It's an island, and officially it's the Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary.
Cool. And so you've been to San Francisco. I've never been to San Francisco. You've been to San Francisco. Did you go to Alcatraz?
No, I didn't make it out there. Okay. I wanted to, but it just didn't happen. It is a really interesting history. So it operated as a jail as a federal prison from 1934 to 1963.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It had the capacity officially for up to 600 convicts in individual cells, but it had a maximum of 300 prisoners at a time.
Okay.
It has some pretty famous people.
Such as?
Al Capone.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought that he was more of like a Chicago guy.
Well,
put him in. Yeah, that's great.
He ran through a couple of prisons, and I guess he was still running his operations behind bars. So they ultimately put him in Alcatraz from 1934 to 1939. And apparently he couldn't do it. Like, he couldn't bribe anyone. He couldn't run his stuff behind Alcatraz. It was just too high security. He had no special treatment, and he spent most of his time in Alcatraz sick with syphilis.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Which, I mean, at the time, who didn't, right?
Like, yeah, everyone had syphilis in the 30s and 40s, but still.
There was Machine Gun Kelly.
Machine Gun Kelly. I know that name.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
He was another famous character, I would imagine, from the same kind of mobster background as Al Capone.
Yeah.
There was the Birdman of Alcatraz, Robert Stroud.
I've heard that name too, the Birdman of Alcatraz. Huh.
Right. So I don't know anything about his actual crimes, but apparently in previous prisons that he's been at, he bred and studied like dozens of birds in his cell. And so when he got moved to Alcatraz, he was not allowed to have birds anymore. But he had already become so famous for keeping birds that, like, someone wrote a biography of him, his crimes, and his studies, and he couldn't read it when it came out because Alcatraz had, like, a strict no news, no outside media rule.
Yeah.
So, like, he couldn't know what was being said about him. But, yeah, those were some of very famous people, lots of famous escape attempts, movies that have been made about it.
Yeah.
I'll go over some quick stats. So, like I said, it was a federal prison that was constructed on Alcatraz Island, 2 kilometers off of the coast of San Francisco and California, America, Earth, etc. The whole island was 9 hectares in size.
Okay. That's probably big, maybe not that big.
So a hectare is 10,000 meters squared.
Okay. Big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I pulled up every single sports analogy, sports relativity that I could think of. So it's the equivalent of roughly 12 and a half soccer fields, 16.8 football fields, 72 Olympic size swimming pools, 9 rugby fields, or 10 baseball fields. So, like, choose your sports measurement that you most relate to.
Cool. It's big, is what we're getting at. It's a big island.
Well, I mean, is it though? Like, well, 10 baseball fields is not like really that big of an island. And I'm going to tell you about just how much stuff they built on it. And considering it had 600 convicts that they thought they could house.
Yeah.
Plus the guards, plus everyone else that lived there to run the stuff. Like, all living in 10 baseball fields is like pretty impressive.
That is. That's quite a bit. Okay. Let's put it this way. It's big enough that you can say, that's a pretty big space. It's not big enough that you would want to stay there if you didn't have to. Right? Can we agree on that?
Yeah, that's true. Read a little bit about the daily life as a prisoner on Alcatraz. So it was definitely, it had a reputation because it was a maximum security prison. But it was actually ran very strictly and very well. And so a typical day would look like this. You'd wake up, you'd sweep your cell clean, get dressed, and then come out for head count. Go to the mess hall for breakfast, do a little bit of work either on the docks or in the laundry or one of the industrial buildings nearby. And then after that, you would have some free time to study in the library, have some dinner in the mess hall, lights out at 9:30. So life as a prisoner there generally was not that bad. It was sometimes blown out of proportion to the point where criminals would want to get sent to Alcatraz for their street cred.
Right. Because it kind of had like the name recognition.
That's right.
But it wasn't like a suffering prison. It was like a very structured.
Right. And it was also the type of prison where if you were the type of criminal that would be in danger, even behind bars, it was actually the safest place for you. Because no one could get to you. So, you know, depending on the kind of prisoner you were, that might have actually been your safe haven.
Right. Interesting.
That being said, there were some pretty atrocious parts of Alcatraz and periods where it wasn't so great. For example, the first warden of the state prison was so strict that he didn't allow any talking by any of the prisoners unless specifically spoken to.
Okay.
And so if you spoke out loud, you could get sent into like the dungeon.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Pretty strict. I mean, that didn't last long.
Can't imagine how it could have lasted that long.
Well, I mean, it was at first, but then at some point, all the prisoners realized that if everyone spoke and everyone went against this rule, they couldn't throw everyone into the dungeon. So then it broke down pretty fast.
Yeah.
During the life of the federal prison, there were 14 escape attempts made involving 36 men.
Okay.
23 were caught, 6 were shot dead, 2 drowned, and 5 believed to have drowned.
Believed to have drowned.
Believed to have drowned.
But maybe they got away.
Who knows, right?
Wow.
Who never found. And as I mentioned, the guards and their families lived on the island too. The children took the boat off the island every day to go to school. Nothing grew on the island. You had to take the boat ride. Everything had to be shipped in for everything, like food, water, supplies, cigarettes, magazines, anything.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, it's like Australia. That's a joke.
Yeah. And so that is a brief summary of the Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary. So diving into the history of Alcatraz. The history of Alcatraz started roughly in the mid-1800s. So at this time, the Americans have basically taken over that part of California.
Okay.
But it was still contentious. And so they needed a coastal defense for the San Francisco Bay.
Right.
And this was the most important American port on the Pacific coast.
Okay.
They decided the island of Alcatraz would be a great place to build armaments and use that as defense.
Huh.
So it was started in 1853. It was started by a Lieutenant Zealous Bates Tower. Which I'm only mentioning because of that name.
Zealous Bates Tower. That's, yeah.
That's a powerful name. So he spent basically 4 years building up the island of Alcatraz to be a military fort. And it was really quite difficult. I mean, I don't know if you've heard of the nickname for Alcatraz, but it's nicknamed the Rock.
Yeah.
And that's truly just what it was. It was this barren rock. It was rough and steep in some parts. It was really soft in sandstone on some parts, but then the strata, like underneath that sandstone, was just unbelievably hard granite. It was the toughest thing to build on. And on top of that, nothing grew on there. So it was subject to heavy winds all the time. It was subject to waves from the ocean. It had unstable rocks because, if you didn't know already, but San Francisco is very earthquake prone.
Yeah.
It's on a fault line.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole thing is basically just impossible.
Yeah. Which is good. But I mean, also, yeah, I guess it's kind of a good place to build a military.
Right. It's very unapproachable.
Yeah. It's like, it's hard to get to. You don't really care if anybody shoots it with a cannonball because it's like, well, it looked bad anyways, right?
This really contributed to a lot of the difficulties in building. And it took basically over the next almost 100 years for them to build up this island. And materials and workers had to be shipped in every day. So to start the construction, Lieutenant Tower bought a whale boat. Like not like a brand new one, but like an old, like dingy one that he had to fix up.
Yeah.
He had to like fixer up a boat so that he could fixer up an island. Quite intensive.
Yeah, but to be honest, fixing up a boat sounds way less intense than fixing up an island. Like that's kind of a reasonable first step. So I find it actually really funny that, yeah, there was just like, oh, a whaling boat, right? Oh, we need a whaling boat. Right. It's like, okay, cool. Well, here you go. Because of course, right? I think of like whaling as being such an old thing, but
no,
ended recently. It's still going on in some parts of the world, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, mid-1800s, is that not when Moby Dick takes place?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well,
I'm an English major. I haven't read any of the classics.
So yeah, materials and workers have to be shipped in every day. They also, because it's a fort, right? So they needed masonry. They needed stones.
Right.
So they had to try to find the appropriate stones from quarries nearby. It was really difficult time procuring the right rocks to be strong enough and to be transportable and all of that.
Nice. Good hard work for a zealous man, right?
That's right. And so the first year or so, they were just building temporary buildings so that they could have enough temporary infrastructure to build the permanent stuff. They built wharves, obviously. to be able to ship to the island, you need to have kind of a port or a little receiving area for the ships to dock.
Yeah.
So they had to first build the wharfs on the island, then they built the roads from the wharfs to the site, then they built the buildings on the site, and then finally they built the batteries, which are, if you've ever been to a military fort, like a historical area, there's the kind of like a low wall where all the cannons would sit and all the guns would sit pointing out.
Yeah. Okay.
So those would be the batteries.
The battery.
And that's the ultimate goal, is to be able to have this island that's just like surrounded by these low walls with guns pointing out. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's like really the ultimate goal of this.
Huh.
But yeah, first had to build the wharfs from the water, the roads from the wharfs, the building from the roads.
Yeah.
So that they could finally have enough people and lay down area to build the batteries.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, yeah, in a lot of ways, yeah, it's like building a city.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
So that you can then stop. Oh, no. That's dark. But basically, they built a city so that they could keep the Mexicans out of the city.
Well, anyway.
Yeah.
And along with that, whole kind of, I'm going to call it a settlement, because as I'm reading this, that's what it felt like a little kind of pioneer settlement. They had to build everything from scratch.
Right.
So they built shops, they built blacksmiths, they had stables, they had the mess halls, they had the barracks. They had to build a giant water tank because this island was in the middle of salt water, like right beside the Pacific Ocean. And they needed water to mix concrete, and they needed water to be supplied for general use.
Okay.
It operated as a military fort at first and somehow evolved into a military prison.
Hmm.
They started housing prisoners there in 1861, so fairly early in its history. But it wasn't a great number of them. It was still mostly used as a fortification with up to maybe 30 prisoners, military prisoners, at any given time.
Right. Okay.
So it wasn't a lot, and it wasn't high security at all. They were just kind of shipped there and then wandered around by themselves. Like, it wasn't...
Sure.
They weren't guarded.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And so up until 1899, there were 25 military prisoners, roughly.
Okay.
And then a year later, all of a sudden, the number jumped up to 400.
Ooh.
Military prisoners. So what happened there was a lot more prisoners from the end of the Civil War.
Oh.
And some of the beginnings of the Americans' involvement in Southeast Asia.
Right.
And so military prisoners from the Philippines, some of the military prisoners from the Mexican wars.
Yeah.
Those border wars, they were all ended up shipped to San Francisco.
Okay.
Especially from Southeast Asia, because that's the first port of call from Southeast Asia, right?
Right, yeah.
So then they would all end up in Alcatraz. And so for that to jump up suddenly 400 people or prisoners, they spend a lot of the next 10 years just building up the prison infrastructure on Alcatraz for the military prison.
Yeah.
Which kind of set the tone for the island.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Okay.
And this first military prison was just made out of wood, right? It was a wooden cell with maybe iron doors, but it was very kind of old school, low security, and escapes were often. Pretty much everyone there tried to escape, and most of them succeeded.
Oh, nice.
They would just either steal uniforms and then sneak off with the boats.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would just often wander off and somehow sneak onto a boat or have a boat arrive to pick them up. Like, they were just, yeah.
That's amazing.
As I was reading through the roster of some of the crimes of people that would be sent, it was, I mean, history is always like hindsight is 2020, but a lot of the prisoners were maybe people who had abandoned, deserters, that's the word,
right?
If they were deserters, which at the time, a lot of them were also like drafted, or was it called drafted for the Civil War?
Was it conscription? I don't know the difference, but...
Basically, you just didn't have a choice.
Yeah. It was you were told to go to war.
That's right.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of deserters that were sent there. And I don't know, in some sense, it didn't seem like the right punishment, I suppose. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, early America was very war-y. So they kind of needed...
Early America?
Just early. All, yeah. I don't know. But anyhow, but I get it. You've got to have laws to make people do things that they don't want to do.
Sure.
Right? Like it or not.
So yes, the early history, the military history and the military prison was primarily to house those prisoners. There were four dungeons that were constructed in the basement of the fortifications, and they were quite awful. So those four dungeons basically were underground. They had very minimal, if really any, ventilation. They had basically a slit on the top of the door that allowed airflow, and that was it.
Oof.
It was a solid door. You would be in complete darkness, and it was a third of the size of all the other cells, the regular cells. So basically, it would be the size of like a coffin. And I don't know if you've ever been to San Francisco. I made this terrible decision when I went to San Francisco and thinking, it's California, it's going to be warm, I'm not going to bring any jacket.
Yeah.
And that was a poor decision because San Francisco is cold. Like Northern California did not get warm.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, San Francisco is only a little ways south of Windsor, Ontario.
Yeah.
Like just the way that everything goes.
Well, you know what? Like the year that I went to San Francisco was also the year the California Girls made the hit. Okay.
So yeah. It's just so Bay Area. If we have any Americans listening, I mean, I don't think that Bay Area is technically Northern California, Central California, right?
No, I thought it was Northern
California. Doesn't matter.
But, it was pretty cold, yeah. Is all.
And it's like you've got the hills and then you've got the ocean and everything just makes it cold.
That's right.
Yeah.
So basically the point is these dungeons would be unventilated for the most part, complete darkness, just unreasonably small with no heat. And they were for misbehaved prisoners. And for the most part, those dungeons were kept when the final federal prison was constructed, and they were still used at the beginning parts of the federal prison before they had their maximum, super maximum security D block.
Right.
So they were using those dungeons as kind of like timeouts. I don't know what you call it.
Yeah.
What's a timeout in jail? Oh God, I don't know anything about jail
life. They might just call it a timeout. I don't know. I think anybody listening to it, you know what a timeout is, and then just imagine that, but in jail.
Yeah. All right. So turn of the century, 1900s, military prison. By 1907, they officially dropped it as an army post and made it an official U.S. military prison.
Right.
There was a new building constructed in 1910 with a permanent prison building that could house 400 prisoners.
Okay. 400. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in 1913, there were a lot of kind of grumbles. It was not so great, and the military did not like that you had such a visible, obvious, and large military prison in the middle of such a commercial and residential area. So San Francisco was a vibrant city.
Yeah.
And they thought that having such a giant military prison in the middle of it gave the wrong impression that you had a lot of misbehaving officers.
Right. Okay. I understand the logic.
It was located in the middle of a bay that was a frequent commuter route, right? So if you were going from, I think, Sausalito?
Okay.
Which is the island off of San Francisco on the other side of the bay. Lots of people were commuting back and forth, and lots of tourists were taking the ferries back and forth, and they would ask, oh, what's on that island? What's that big, giant building on that island? And then you would have to explain it's a military prison. It just didn't look good. So there were a lot of alternatives. They said that really it should be, we should put something like the Statue of Liberty on that island because it's so close to such a major city and it would just be such a beautiful symbolic thing.
Yeah, that's a very nice idea.
Right, except you can't have like a Statue of Liberty version 2, right? It's just like,
but it doesn't have to be a Statue of Liberty. You could have like the Statue of Liberty on the one side and then like the Statue of Doing It Your Way, you know? or the Statue...
The Statue of Doing It Your Way. That should be the name of our episode.
Yeah. The Statue of Taking Care of Business, you know? It, just all sorts of stuff. There's so many options.
Right. So the military was starting to withdraw from Alcatraz and wanting to relocate everyone to somewhere, you know, like Area 51, where nobody would ever know and nobody would ever see. And it's just,
oh, except we know about Area 51.
That's a different story. It's a different episode.
Yeah.
So there were several proposals like this statue of whatever you want. There was also a proposal to use it for a new immigration station.
Okay.
There was an influx of immigrants from Asia, mostly from China at the time, into San Francisco. And the Department of Immigration wanted to change it to be used as sleeping accommodations for newly arrived immigrants. They said that the prison cells could be adapted for Asiatic uses.
Okay.
No idea what is an Asiatic use.
I'm not gonna go there, but
they said all we have to do is remove the cell doors and paint the steel bars white. Cool, right? Because, you know, Asian people were colorblind. Paint it white, everything's gonna be fine. Very odd. So the Chinese Consolidated Benevolent Society in San Francisco did raise oppositions to this, saying that this is maybe not the most welcoming place to put immigrants.
Yeah.
Not the most sanitary, not the most comforting. It's still a prison.
Yeah.
Right? Like you can take off the doors and it's still a prison.
Yeah.
But they were largely ignored. A bill was introduced and passed to transfer the island to that use. But some bureaucratic mess in Congress, and it never actually happened.
Gotcha.
So that's a good thing, I suppose.
And yeah, you know, it's not a Asiatic purpose building. It's just a let's not call it a prison, right?
Right. Well, I mean, it's rare that a bureaucratic mix-up leads to a relatively good conclusion, but I'll give it that.
Vivian has a strong anti-bureaucratic streak, in case you haven't picked it up throughout the course of this podcast.
So ultimately, in 1933, Alcatraz Island was transferred to the Department of Justice to be used as a maximum security federal prison. And the people of San Francisco actually was not thrilled about this. They didn't love having this military prison to begin with. As I mentioned, people escaped from the military prison often.
Yeah.
And they were worried that if they turn it into a maximum security prison, you would have these very high profile, very dangerous and violent criminals suddenly within 2 kilometers of San Francisco.
Yeah.
So they were not thrilled about that.
How did they... Oh, man. See, because the thing is, San Francisco, a mere 45 years later. So it is a little bit funny. It's just like, we don't want criminals 2 kilometers off the coast of San Francisco. Summer of love. The only people worse than criminals are hippies.
Alcatraz has a history of that as well, but we'll get to it.
Yes.
Okay, so that's everything that led up to this becoming the Alcatraz that we know.
Okay.
But I think what's interesting is to know that it was a prison long before it was a prison.
Yeah.
It was a military prison originally.
Prison. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, the Department of Justice and the department, the military as well, did a lot of work to convert this low security prison into a high security prison so that there would be a lot of assurance to make sure it was actually maximum security and that the people of San Francisco would not have to worry about escaped violent criminals.
Right. Okay.
Like I said, originally the prison building was mostly wooden. It was wooden cells, wooden and iron doors. Prisoners were able to basically wander the island. They had access to the different facilities. They were in charge of doing the laundries for the military overall.
Yeah.
They contributed a lot to the overall industry of the island.
Cool.
And so a lot had to change to make it a locked down, just high security place.
Yeah.
So what they did was they installed tool-proof steel grates and bars basically everywhere.
Gotcha.
Everywhere.
Tool-proof.
Tool-proof. So originally they had iron bars.
Yeah.
Right, just typical iron bars. And they found that hacksaws or there were other ways of hacking through these bars. So they brought in a lot of steel.
Yeah.
And they tested them. They tested them against hacksaws and they spent like hours on it. It finally proved that you cannot hack through these things. And that's what they installed everywhere. Every single cell door now has steel grates. Every single window now has steel bars.
Yeah.
Every single manhole, every single access shaft, the division between blocks and the walkways. There were also new kind of armaments and cages built above each of the blocks for walkways and guard towers so that all the guards could have this kind of caged walkway.
Right.
That was multi-leveled because the cell block was, I think, three levels.
Yeah.
Three levels of cells. And you would have a multi-level walkway above that with guard towers and gun towers.
Oof.
That were equipped with tear gas and mounted guns.
Yeah.
And so the guards would be able to patrol the block and have a visual and a shot at every single point of the cell block from that guard tower.
That is insane. Wow.
Right.
Yeah. That is like some real innovation, you know, make sure that you'll be able to kill somebody from anywhere.
Yeah, it was pretty intense.
Yeah.
All the wood was replaced with concrete. And I've read multiple accounts of how the prison kind of building was. And I think ultimately what it was that the prison building was concrete on the outside.
Okay.
Okay. So the shell of the building is concrete. And then they constructed each cell out of iron. So then you would have each little cell, each room was an iron kind of block.
Okay.
And then each of the walls of each cell would be another layer of concrete.
Wow.
Basically, each cell had to be a prison inside the prison.
Okay. So they were not messing around. This is like maximum security.
That's right.
We're getting into like meta prison now. It's a prison in a prison in a prison, right?
That's right. Yeah. So if you could get through one layer of concrete, you still had another layer of concrete to get through. And then that was the idea of Alcatraz, was that if you could get out of your cell, you still had to get out of the prison. You still had to get off of the island.
Yeah.
You had to still get onto shore somewhere.
Yeah.
And so all those compounded was what made Alcatraz so secure.
Gotcha.
Right. Alcatraz was also outfitted with some of the latest technology in prisons at the time. They had mechanical locking systems because up until then, they still had each door had a key and you need to put the key in to open the door.
Yeah.
So that was the first time where they had a control panel where they could open a door remotely, or they could open a series of doors remotely.
Right.
And you didn't have to be there, right? So it made it safer for the guards.
Yeah.
They installed metal detectors, and that was new.
Wow, yeah.
Yep. So they installed 3 metal detectors, one at the wharf, so where you would get off the boat.
Okay.
First check. One at the entrance of the jail.
Okay.
Obviously coming in. And then one in the back door where prisoners would go out back to the recreational area.
Right. Okay. So in case anybody like stashed a knife in the yard.
Yeah, shiv.
Shiv, thank you.
A knife.
I don't watch a lot of prison drama, okay?
Yes, a mechanical locking system. The island itself, I didn't really talk about the waters around Alcatraz, but the waters around Alcatraz are very treacherous. It's very strong currents, very high winds, extremely cold water coming directly from the Pacific.
Yeah.
The tide as it recedes pulls you out into the ocean.
Oof. Okay.
And it is filled with great white sharks.
Okay. I like it.
Right? You didn't even have to. It's like a natural moat.
Yeah. That is just as good as it gets. That is like the icing on the cake, where it's just like, oh, by the way, sharks.
By the way, like not even regular sharks. You know what I mean? Like great whites.
Yeah.
It was very specific the descriptions that I read.
Oh, man. Not even one of those like nerd sharks with the snaggle teeth.
No, we're talking great jaws. White.
Tough shark. Yeah. Okay. So it's an impressive place to bring somebody and make them stay.
Right, exactly. So very high security at this point. Basically, each cell was 3 meters by 1.5 meter. It had 3 solid concrete walls. And it was kind of difficult to understand or picture, but I think what they actually did was they poured one single giant block of concrete and carved out the cells, is what it sounds like. I don't even know if that is really that much better.
But
solid concrete everywhere. And then, of course, one wall, which is where the door would be made of hardened steel bars.
Wow.
There were 3 blocks, the A, B, and C. Those were the normal blocks with normal cells, as I described. Each cell would have a bed, a sink, a toilet, a small desk, and 2 shelves for personal items.
Okay.
There was also a D block. Ooh. And this was to replace the dungeon.
Right. So the dungeon block.
The dungeon block. So the dungeon I mentioned before, that was underneath the original prison, and they kept. So they built the new prison on top of the dungeon.
Okay.
And they kept using those dungeon blocks up until they built the D block.
Wow.
And the D block had similar things. It was for misbehaving prisoners. It had cells with no sunlight.
Mm.
There was a special part of the D block that was especially bad, in which there was a cell that was called the hole. It didn't have anything in it. It had no toilet, just a hole in the floor. And the prisoner would be left naked in there without blankets and barely any food. So that would be your worst of the worst.
Yeah. I just have to say, I don't understand at all how... So you have somebody who has a problem, right? The whole theory of incarceration is that you put people there and then they're punished and they learn, right?
Yeah.
Putting somebody into solitary confinement makes people go crazy. Like, you're not learning a lesson at that point. You're exacerbating the existing issues. Anyhow, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't know. It's something about breaking people.
Yeah.
So that existed. I thought this part was kind of cute. The prisoners nicknamed the walkways between the blocks and the atrium after places. Like, they had a Broadway after San Francisco.
They had
a Park Avenue, a Michigan Avenue.
Yeah.
And the atrium kind of area between their block and the mess hall was called Times Square, because I guess that's probably where everyone took their roll call.
That is just insanely, like, whimsical and cute.
I know, right?
Don't get it. Yeah. Well, anyhow.
It is kind of cute. Oh, hi. Anyway. So maybe that's a coping mechanism for you. If you live in a somewhat large house, you might want to rename your hallway and
oh, yeah.
your living room
yeah.
as Times Square or, you know, Young and Dundas.
Yeah, whatever.
Nathan Phillips.
Yeah, Davie Street, West Coast folks.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And then make a map. I'm sure you've seen those, right? The cute little like subway maps of like television and stuff like that.
Oh, but yeah. Like,
yeah, TV station and I yeah. forget.
Make
yeah.
a map of your house.
That's
and
right.
Name it after things. It'll make it real cute.
Be cute like Alcatraz.
So despite all of these measures, there were still some serious escape attempts.
Yes.
So I'm going to go into those. This is less the engineering and more just kind of fun,
right.
isn't it? We can't talk about Alcatraz without talking about...
Yeah, the escape attempts.
The escape attempts. So in 1946, there was a two-day riot that ended up with two officers and three prisoners dead, 17 officers and one prisoner wounded.
Okay. I just have to say, for a two-day prison riot, I'm surprised at how low those numbers are.
Right. So not every prisoner was involved.
Yeah.
It was a small group that kind of had a good run.
Okay.
And had a standoff.
Yeah.
So what happened was... two prisoners, it started with two guys. They clubbed an officer on patrol and took his keys.
Okay.
Then they used those keys to free two more people.
Right.
One of those two guys was naked and covered in grease. He climbed up to one of those caged gunneries
yeah.
that I had mentioned. So he crawled up, managed to pry apart some of the bars just enough so that he could slip through naked and greased.
Okay.
And they had obviously timed this really well because they slipped through into the gun gallery while there was a changing of the guards.
Yeah.
And so when the guard came back onto duty, he wasn't expecting this naked dude. And so the guy clubbed him,
oof.
Took his guns... and his keys. He then threw some of the guns. So he had a rifle and a pistol and the keys. He kept the rifle
yeah.
up top with him. He threw the pistol down to his buddies that had been freed and the key. They freed another prisoner. And this kind of went on.
Wow.
Ugh. Well coordinated. Finally, there were 12 guys freed.
Okay.
They also captured three of the guards and managed to lock them in a cell.
Okay.
As hostage.
Yeah.
And at this point, there were alarm bells. Marines and guards from neighboring prisons were now being pulled in. And they were trying to figure out, A, where these guys were.
Right.
B.
Big island.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and they were, I think... they weren't sure if these guys were holed up in the D block or the C block.
Yeah.
And they were trying to make sure that the other prisoners that hadn't been freed would stay under control.
Yeah.
So it took a lot of people to come in and just eat right. They threw grenades.
Ooh.
They had heavy fire. They brought in army planes buzzing around up above the island.
Yeah.
They weren't doing anything. They weren't actually looking for anything, but it was a psychological thing. They just
yeah.
wanted the prisoners to hear
yeah.
that there was aerial patrol.
Okay.
And finally, after the 2 days, three of the prisoners were found dead. The others were captured.
Wait, three of the prisoners were found dead, so not killed by the guards?
I'm not sure. There
okay.
was a lot of heavy fire.
Right.
So they probably were shot dead by the guards and the army. The others were captured, and two of the officers did die.
Oof.
And the remaining prisoners that were captured were ultimately sentenced to death.
Wow. Well, that is rough.
But that was called the Battle of Alcatraz.
Wow.
Quite intense.
Yeah. Okay. So that's, I mean, surprisingly heavy. And like, I mean, it's pretty well coordinated, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. This one is a lot more fun. In 1962, three guys, Clarence and John Anglin and Frank Morris, spent months chipping away at the rotted concrete around their ventilation grates with spoons.
Yeah.
They painted cardboard to look like the original grate to cover it up while they were chipping away at the ventilation grate.
Yep.
So that they could go through. And remember how I said that the cell was inside the prison, like it wasn't directly connected to the outside?
Yep.
So behind their cell was an open maintenance space area where the conduits, some of the utilities were housed. So they made it into that space where they started building life vests and a raft out of raincoats that they had collected.
Hmm.
So every night they would sneak through their holes, replacing the grate with cardboard. They had made paper mache's of their heads to put on the pillow so that the guards would not know that they weren't in bed. And it's really fun because I actually found pictures of what of these paper mache heads. They kept them. They would crawl through into the crawl space, leave the heads on the bed, leave the cardboard on the grates. They would build these rafts and life jackets. And ultimately, on the day of the escape, they climbed the ventilation shaft from the maintenance space to the roof, hopped a fence, and escaped into the bay.
Wow.
Their bodies were never found.
Yeah.
But there were personal items from one of the prisoners found in a plastic bag that floated, drifted nearby.
Okay.
So they were declared drowned.
Wow.
But they were never found. And Mythbusters Season 1 tested their strategy, and they did manage to paddle across the bay to safety.
Nice.
So it is technically feasible.
Wow. Okay. So maybe they made it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Really interesting. And those were some of the really fun escapes, but that actually became some of the downfall. So like I said, that escape happened in 1962.
Yep.
The prison operated until 1963. One of the biggest problems, like I said, is that it was really difficult to ship things in.
Yep.
And you had to ship everything in.
Yeah.
So the cost of running the prison was $10 per prisoner per day.
Wow. Okay.
Which is more than three times the cost of a jail run in Atlanta.
Yeah.
The reason why those prisoners were able to chip away at the concrete around the grate, remember I said it was rotted concrete?
Rotted concrete.
So an island in the middle of salt water with sea salt spray constantly was deteriorating the concrete so much, and the rebar was starting to corrode.
Yeah.
So you've got this crumbling prison that was in need of millions of dollars of repair.
Nice.
And before they transferred it to be a federal prison, they tried to bring in water supply that was permanent. So they tried to drill a well on the island. And remember how I said the rock was really hard once you got kind of below the sandstone?
Yeah.
So they encountered granite rock at 8 meters deep. Okay. Keep that number in your head.
Okay.
At 8 meters deep, they encountered granite.
Okay.
They kept drilling really slow because granite is so hard to get through.
Yeah.
Finally, they got to water at 90 meters deep.
90 meters?
Meters.
Oh, wow.
90 meters deep. They finally found water. They tasted it, and it was salty.
Of course it was, because you're 90 meters deep on a small island in the Pacific. Okay, you deserve that one.
So they were never able to get water, fresh water on the island, except to be shipped in every single day by boat.
Right, okay.
And it was getting to be so difficult to maintain. The building was deteriorating. And finally, there was an escape in 1962.
Mm-hmm.
that made people go, why are we operating this? It's a maximum security prison that is now escapable.
Yeah.
Shut it down.
Well, there you go.
So they shut it down. After the prison closed, I don't know if you heard about this, but in 1969, there was a Native American occupation of Alcatraz.
Okay.
It was mostly college students from San Francisco at first. Mm-hmm. So it started with about 90 men, women, and children.
Yeah.
And it was a group called the United Indians of All Tribes.
Okay.
They were protesting federal policies related to American Indians.
Right.
And after the first wave, there were more and more Native American college students and activists that joined, to the point where Alcatraz was then suddenly up to 600 people.
Oof.
Of just occupiers.
Yeah.
And they were citing a treaty from way, way back, like Treaty of Fort Laramie, between the U.S. and the Sioux people,
mm-hmm.
that said the U.S. would promise to return all retired, abandoned, or out-of-use federal land to Native peoples. So after the close down of the prison, this technically did apply.
Right.
And it was super successful at first. So Jane Fonda came,
yeah.
and occupied it for a while. Lots of famous people. A lot of people either came to stay and help occupy, or they donated food, they donated money, mm-hmm. they donated supplies. The island itself was very abandoned and underdeveloped. Like I said, it lacked fresh water, but the occupiers basically said that they experienced similar conditions on government Indian reserves.
Yeah.
So, right.
Yes.
They had built their own clinic. They had repurposed some of the prison buildings. They built their own kitchen, their own nursery, grade school, all sorts. And at first, it was great. But then the summer ended. A lot of the students had to go back to school.
Yeah.
It was really kind of overrun with hippies.
Of course. And you said 1969?
That's right.
Yeah.
So it's exactly what you said earlier. All the hippies, all the vagrant people just started living on Alcatraz, occupying it, but basically taking up all the supplies
yeah.
that the activists had stored up.
Yeah, of course.
And at first, I mean, the occupation, the way that they had established it is it was alcohol and drug free.
Yeah.
But then, of course, these people brought,
got the hippies rolling in.
That's right.
Yes.
Drugs and alcohol all overran it. And it started falling apart after the first year.
Yeah.
But people like diehard stayed. They did stay. And it stayed for 2 years. Wow. They occupied Alcatraz for 2 years. By the end, they were finally kicked out by the Marines and they fell apart. By the time it was all over, there were only 6 men, 5 women, and 4 children living there.
Right.
But they did make a pretty big difference. So I don't know if you remember who the president might have been at the time.
That would be Richard Nixon, correct?
Oh, good job.
Yeah?
Yeah. So Nixon rescinded the Indian termination policy, which is what he had originally intended. It would have ended federal recognition of tribes and the relationship with the U.S. government, which... That's pretty big.
Yeah.
Complete forgetting, not recognizing a whole people.
Yeah.
That's huge. And he replaced it with new policy of self-determination. Millions of acres of ancestral Indian land was returned. And there were a lot of legislative proposals supporting tribal self-rule as a result of this protest.
Cool. Oh, good for them.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And today, it is the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. It is part of the National Park Service. You can take a 15-minute ferry ride out into Alcatraz. You can tour the abandoned prisons. There's a oldest operating lighthouse and some military fortifications. And it gets 1.7 million visitors per year, which I'm sure is not the same number that we're going to see this year. Usually it's 1.7 million.
Yeah.
I did want to touch on some interesting rehab work that they're doing now.
Okay.
They're doing a lot of restoration of the fort because the salt water has damaged the concrete so much. And I just want to say, like the Romans, if you remember my little ad on the Roman roads, they did figure out how to mix a concrete that would actually be strengthened with salt water, which is really interesting. That's a new technology that we're only now rediscovering.
Right.
But this concrete that they use and that we use conventionally deteriorates with salt water.
Yes.
So they're trying to figure out the damage and track the damage. And what it involves is basically engineers having to rappel down the side of the building, mapping the cracks.
Yeah.
And drilling holes into the concrete to test the conductivity between holes to see how much the rebar has deteriorated. Because if you can put, you know, electrodes on both sides.
Yeah.
And test like how much electrical potential you have on either end, you mm-hmm. can see whether the rebar was still a solid piece.
Right. Okay.
And so they're doing that all along the face of the walls to see what the damage is, what needs to be repaired. They've covered the roof with solar panels so that the island is at least 100% off the grid.
Okay.
They're doing a lot of seismic stabilizations to make sure that it can withstand earthquakes. And it's all resulting in roughly $17 million in restoration. But very interesting. I don't know that I've ever been on a site visit where I have to rappel down anything. I have been offered like working at heights training, but I mean, this is why I avoid vertical infrastructure, right?
Like, yeah, you're linear.
I stay on the ground, firmly on the ground. Sometimes I look down holes and that's it.
Yeah, sure. But you don't go down the hole.
Well,
you,
I try not
you
to.
You peer. Yeah.
Anyway, and that's Alcatraz.
Alcatraz. Cool. Well, thanks for sticking with us through that. Went to some pretty grim places, all things considered. If you liked this episode, if you hated this episode, please hit us up on social media. We are at Measured in Metric on Instagram, and we're also on Facebook. Don't bother with Twitter because it's...
Because I don't bother with Twitter.
Yeah. And our website, measuredinmetric.com. Special thanks, as always, to Astronomic Audio for editing and sound engineering.
That's right. Give us a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this on Apple Podcasts or whatever.
Spotify, Google.
Whichever podcast platform you're using. And if you hated this episode, then just, try again next time. I don't know.
Go away.
Thank you so much for sticking with us. I hope everyone felt a little bit of comfort in this time of isolation. Maybe some fun times role-playing in Alcatraz. I don't know what you guys are doing at home. And that's all. We'll be hopefully back to our regular programming after this. And I hope you all stay safe and stay healthy. And as always, measure in metrics.